On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In a decade of Republican majority on Capitol Hill and still unrepaired under Democrats, congressional earmarks for special interest spending exploded, and no one has played the earmarks monster like the powerful senior Republicans from the state of Alaska. The bridge to nowhere? $250 million earmarked for a bridge to 50 people? Alaska. The millions for Coconut Road in distant Florida earmarked after a powerful congressman got a big money political gift? Alaska. Many do it, but to understand the earmarks uproar, look north to Alaska. Up next on Point, the Alaska Gang, earmarks, and the U.S. Congress. Joining me first today from Anchorage, Alaska, is Rich Maurer, Special Projects Editor for the Anchorage Daily News, where he's been for 24 years. Rich, thanks very much for being with us. We know it's early up there.
Yeah, thanks. I'm happy to be here.
And from Washington, John Stanton, who's been following the money in Congress up to Alaska and beyond for the newspaper Roll Call. John, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Rich, first to you in Anchorage. All kinds of attention now to both Don Young and Senator Stevens. In the national press, is this something new going on in Alaska, or is this ho-hum up in your northern state?
Well, I think you have to look at a couple things here. I think the issue of earmarks has always been a big deal in the national press because Alaska has gotten more than its share, if you consider it as a proportion, although the defense of those earmarks is that Alaska is a new state to the Union, has a lot, very, very small population in a huge place. I think there is a separate scandal that's unfolding that's a little bit different than the politics of earmarks. And that has to do with a political corruption investigation conducted by the FBI here in Alaska. It's been ongoing for several years. Emerged last summer with a bunch of raids on legislative offices, including those of Senator Ted Stevens' son, Ben, who was, at that point was the president of the state Senate.
And give us a little sense of that scandal, which is the backdrop here, getting its fingers into the Alaska legislature, but also into the life of Senator Ted Stevens. His house was lifted up and given a second story, and now there's FBI folks crawling around his land.
Yeah, that was the FBI is investigating the role of Vico, which is probably the biggest oil field service company in Alaska, plays on the world stage to a much smaller degree. They've been in the business of political fundraising for 20-something years, been caught a few times and fined a few times, but this is quite a bit different. Two of their top executives pleaded guilty last month to bribing state legislators. It turns out that in the year 2000, Vico organized and in some way was involved with the expansive remodeling of Senator Stevens' Alaska residence in a small town called Girdwood, a ski resort area about 45 miles from Anchorage, that involved jacking up the house and building a first story underneath the original, doubling the size of the house.
Nice rehab if you can get it.
I guess so, yeah.
And Congressman,
at this point, there's no indication that Vico paid for the job, although there is an investigation to that effect.
And Senator Ted Stevens saying last week that the FBI has asked him to preserve his records as part of this widening investigation. There, Don Young, Alaska's congressman, also a big recipient of political contributions from Vico, the oil company.
Exactly, more than $250,000 over the past 15 or 20 years.
So there's trouble on the home turf, and then, John Stanton, there's trouble in Washington. Lots of attention last week to this extraordinary story of Congressman Young's involvement in Coconut Road way down in Florida. And I guess the backdrop, just the overall numbers. I mean, I'm looking here at, for the most recent year, I've seen numbers, pet projects worth more than $1,000 for each Alaskan in 2005, more than three times any other state. And look at other states like North Carolina, barely $25 per resident. That's a gigantic, yawning gap. So is Congress ready to back these guys up or hang them out to dry, John?
Oh, I think that at least at this point, you know, members of the House and the Senate are not going to turn on their colleagues. You know, it's important to note that neither Congressman Young nor Senator Stevens has been officially targeted by the FBI or the Justice Department for investigation. Although they have talked with apparently Senator Stevens's lawyers about making sure he keeps all of his sort of paper records so that they can go through them, and he's indicated, I guess, the Washington Post last week that he expects to be talked to at some point, but that he is not yet being investigated, at least officially.
But John McCain, also, very ready in the GOP debate last week to point his finger at that bridge to nowhere, $250 million for 50 or 80 people on an island, the size of the Golden Gate Bridge practically, to say this is the number one example of outrageous earmarking.
Well, you know, there are a handful of members in both the House and the Senate who are unapologetic about calling out their colleagues on earmarks. I mean, you know, Senators DeMint, Senator McCain, Senator Coburn are sort of three of the leading lights on the anti-earmark war that's going on right now. But at the same time, the majority, vast majority of the members are not going to sort of step into this fray, at least at this point, because, frankly, they all get a lot of earmarks, too, for their districts. And, you know, they don't want to have any kind of scrutiny put on them as well. And a lot of folks sort of believe in the earmark process. They think maybe the bridges in Alaska or some other projects that have been done around the country maybe are an abuse of that system, but that all in all, it's a good system. So.
All in all, but then the quid pro quo gets so blatant. Remind us, if you would, John, of the story that got very public last week of Congressman Don Young's special interest in a highway in Florida, Coconut Road.
Well, this is sort of an interesting example because, as you said, you know, Don Young is not from Florida. And following a few days after a fundraiser that developers down in Florida held for Congressman Young, he then started pushing federal money for a new highway that would go through this Coconut Road, as it's called. And the guy that organized it, Daniel Aronoff, actually owns about 4,000 acres along the road. And at his fundraiser, he raised about $40,000 for Congressman Young. And then just several days later, he came out with this earmark. And
earmark that would take steps toward connecting Mr. Aronoff's 4,000 acres to Interstate 75 and thereby, you know, push their value way up.
Well, and he also took the step of actually writing to the local authorities who had opposed this road and saying that if they didn't go ahead and start using the federal money the way that they had been directed in the earmark, that they could start losing other federal funding. So
pushing so hard there that he's got a Republican commissioner down in Florida in Lee County, Ray Judah, calling an example of congressional corruption that is, quote, a cancer on the federal government. This Republican commissioner saying it would appear that Don Young was doing a favor for a major contributor. Rich Maurer, how's that playing in Anchorage?
Well, Don Young has his fans here, as you might expect. He's been reelected
many times,
many times. And but if you read the letters to the editor in the paper, if you listen to some of the call-up shows, even the conservative ones, they're saying Don Young has got to go. You never know. I mean, the last time Don Young got into trouble politically was when he described the Exxon Valdez as an aberration and was almost beaten by the Democratic mayor of Valdez. And ever since then, he's won by sizable numbers.
You've got the Democratic mayor of Anchorage making critical comments about him now, but Don Young has felt pretty bulletproof. He was approached by a reporter about this Coconut Road story and responded with an obscene gesture. I guess flipped him off. Take that.
Don Young once pounded an USIC on a table in Congress.
You're going to have to define USIC for us Southerners.
I'm not sure I'm allowed to.
That's the bone in a walrus penis,
exactly,
or something.
Exactly.
Okay, they're big. They're it's a big, long, like sword shaped thing.
Yes, and so Don is not known for being dainty. We call him Don. It's no sign of disrespect. Everyone calls him Don. Everyone calls Senator Stevens either Ted or Uncle Ted.
Right.
Don Young is. It's hard to say if he's in any trouble or not. The mayor of Anchorage, Mark Begich, his dad beat Don Young back in the 70s as a dead man. Nick Begich disappeared on a flight, campaign flight, with Representative Boggs, and was still won his election against Don Young back then, and was only after he was declared dead that Don Young assumed that seat.
And the pork has come, and with it has come a lot of support in Alaska. John Stanton, though, the fury over these earmarks has been enormous, the explosion in the last decade huge. The Democrats promised they'd come in and clean it up. Has that happened? Is it happening?
Well, not nearly as fast as folks had hoped, and I think there's some questions as to whether or not they're going to really get a whole lot of ethics reforms and earmark reform done this year. You know, the Senate passed a bill very early on, but the trick to it was that their own internal rules on earmarks were tied to legislation that has to be signed by the president. So while the House passed a similar set of internal rules, which have been modified a little bit since then, those are in place. In the Senate, they are not in place. And it's unclear when or if they will actually go into place.
And Democrats not exactly showing the same fervor now that they've got the majority that they did when they were on the outside. You want to get a sense of the flavor of this, what the Alaska's delegation has brought home. Here's a video posted on YouTube on the Internet in April with Congressman Don Young at a small gathering. Said he and Alaska's two senators are the second largest source of revenue in the state and that Alaska needs to prepare for the day they retire.
Senator Stevens is going to leave us someday, and I'm going to leave you too. And it takes all those years to bring up that seniority to be able to achieve those goals. So we've got to start thinking on the state level and legislative level how we can close that gap between the federal dollars we've been getting than what we won't get.
A lot of seniority to achieve those goals. And among those goals, well, there was that great big bridge to nowhere, so-called. In the Republican presidential debate last week, Senator John McCain was asked what he would do differently to distinguish himself from the current administration and said this.
We've got to stop the earmarking. The bridge to nowhere, the $233 million bridge to an island in Alaska with 50 people on it was the tipping point.
A quarter billion, 50 people, a big bridge. It's not going to happen, but Don Young pushed hard for it. Rich Maurer's with us in Alaska and John Stanton in Washington, now also from Washington. Leslie Page joins us. She's director of Citizens Against Government Waste. It's a taxpayer watchdog group. Leslie, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. So
what do you make of the stripes of this Alaska delegation? We know they are by no means the only ones who go after earmarks, but they're sort of the extraordinary kings of it, aren't they?
Well, they are notorious. There's no question about that. We've been pointing to them for years as being just what they said they were, which is the second largest economy in the state of Alaska. And Ted Stevens is notorious. So is Don Young for grabbing a lot of pork, taking it back to the state. And I know that they use the excuse that Alaska is a relatively recent state to the union, et cetera, but they have gotten way more of their fair share of pork. And it has nothing to do, in my opinion, in our opinion, with the fact that they are a new state that has to catch up. I mean, they became part of the union around the same time the interstate highway system was inaugurated, and they've taken a huge portions of that money, way out of proportion to what they ought to be getting. But, you know, I mean, I don't want to, Ted Stevens is a favorite whipping boy and a favorite person of interest, shall we say?
Yep.
To Citizens Against Government Waste and lots of other groups that look at pork. But I think we also need to look at the bigger picture here, too, mm-hmm. which is this is a huge distortion of the spending process in Washington. It distorts the administrative side, the executive branch spending issues. It distorts all the rules of transparency and fairness and public disclosure.
Leslie, remind us how it works, earmarking, exactly how it works to pump spending up so big, so quietly.
Well, earmarking, I'm putting my fingers up in quotes here. Earmarking, I mean, there are earmarks that come right out of the administration. That's just money that is set aside when the executive branch brings the budget down. They have specific line items that they want to spend it on. Then Congress gets a hold of that process, and they can add on, and they do. And sometimes they add on a lot of extra projects, and these are what we are calling congressional earmarks. We, Citizens Against Government Waste and other groups, make distinctions between pork barrel spending and earmarks. But generally speaking, these are tagged items of spending that are going to a specific individual or, you know, individual entity. Sometimes it's a company. Sometimes it's a grant to a nonprofit. Sometimes, you know, so there's a lot of different ways you can do earmarking.
And the problem is they don't get aired because they're stuck in the dark of night and nobody knows about them the last minute on the way out the chute?
Well, yeah, and the explosive nature of them. I mean, keep in mind that, you know, 1997, we had maybe 580 or 600 earmarks. You know, in 2006, we had almost 3,000. Most members will tell you, and some members don't care, but most members will tell you they don't have time to read all the bills that they have to vote on. And what happens is, you know, earmarks get placed into these bills and not everyone knows what they're voting on. They often sometimes just look at what they put into the bill. They aren't looking at what everyone else is putting into the bill. And when they authorize or when these appropriations come along, each delegation is given, my understanding is, a certain amount of money that they can spend. And it goes somewhat by seniority, but not everybody in the delegation knows what everyone else is getting. And this is how you can, and because it's so secretive and under the radar, it can explode the way it's exploded. And it's a formula for corruption.
A lot of seniority in Alaska because they keep their folks in there for a long time and in no small part for just this reason. But what about this dynamic we see now with Congressman Don Young, $40,000 in campaign contributions, and the next thing you know, here's the millions for Coconut Road in Florida. The quid pro quo seems so clear there. Is this common, or is this pushing it to a new level of sort of in-your-face outrageousness?
I don't know if it's how common it is to be that outrageous, to be that overt, but I will say to you that earmarking and trading projects for something that you want is not uncommon, which is why it lubricates the process maybe more, and way more than it should. I mean, we've heard of people trading projects saying, you know, you vote for a bill that we want you to vote for. Leadership and other groups have said, come in, vote for a specific bill, and we'll give you the project that you want. We'll take care of you. Conversely, I've also heard of senators, for example, Patty Murray of Washington, who I think in 2006 it was, who said, look, if you're going to go after other people's projects, folks like Coburn and DeMint, we're going to now go after yours. You're next. So, you know, it's all about the horse trading that goes on behind the scenes, and it's used to buy votes. It's used to bribe constituents. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, the taxpayers out there need to stop asking for the stuff. And acting like they deserve it and that they are owed it. I mean, just there's so many different examples of the kind of pork that and earmarking that just I think should curl the average taxpayer's hair. Teapot museums in Sparta, North Carolina. Now, I mean, I can hardly say with a straight face, but is that a national priority?
A museum of teapots, Rich Maurer. Correct. How about it? Do you see any change in the Alaskan expectation or culture on this front? I mean, you describe this internal corruption problem that you're wrestling up with up there now with the oil field services company, VECO, and the state legislature. Is there concern that the years of kind of getting all that can be had out of Washington has created a culture that's seeped into Alaska's own political culture on home turf now?
Well, that's certainly a concern. I think, you know, there was the idea that that Congress is the second largest economy comes from a study done by the University of Alaska, which demonstrated that fact. But, you know, there's multiple layers to this thing. Clearly, an earmark that says we should build a water and sewer project in a village in the bush where they use buckets to carry human waste is something that most Americans would get behind. There's another earmark that's part of this part of the federal investigation that someone might think, some people might think, was a cause of concern, and that was the creation of the Alaska Fisheries Marketing Board by Senator Stevens when he was chairman of the Appropriations Committee, Senate Appropriations Committee, I believe, in 2003. This earmark was a paragraph in a bill that ran pages and hundreds of pages, and it set up a nonprofit in Alaska to distribute $9 million a year in federal marketing funds to the fishing industry, bypassing the usual federal agencies that would give transparency and accountability to this money.
Right.
Senator Stevens' son, Ben, and one of his former, one of Senator Stevens' former aides,
Ben Trevor Stevens, McCain, the former state Senate president in Alaska.
Yes.
Ben Stevens, yeah.
He was Senate president at the time, and Trevor McCabe, former legislative director for Senator Ted Stevens, served on this marketing board. They turn around and give millions of dollars to fishing companies that are in turn paying Ben Stevens so-called consulting fees.
And around and around we go.
Yeah, and so that has popped up in the federal investigation. So that's an example of an earmark that's a little bit different than a highway project.
Leslie, I hear you there.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Well, a couple points for one thing. Absolutely right. I mean, I think he's right on about all this. But part of the problem is you don't find out about these a lot of the time until it's way down the road. And they've already spent millions and a lot of money's already gone into the pockets of various relatives, friends, colleagues, cronies, whatever you want to call them. I mean, that's part of the problem of the transparency issue. I'm talking about the secrecy and making the judgments. I mean, I totally agree with Rich that you may have a place somewhere in the United States, maybe more than one, I dare say, that where there's slag and water, you know, and it's not clean and that sort of thing. But the problem with the earmarking process as we have it now is that there's no ability to make a decent judgment call about which of these projects merits the money. I mean, it's all, everybody says yes to everything. They shove it all in there, and nobody's going to, and there's a sort of an unwritten rule, don't go after mine, or I'll go after yours. And by the way, Mr. Stevens is not the only one that has the problem. I mean, there's been a recent story about Mr. Kanjorski from Pennsylvania, whose nephews were on the board of a company, Cornerstone Technology, which has since gone bankrupt, and his daughter was on the board. And they got tons of money through the Department of Defense, the Department of Energy, millions and millions of dollars. And who knows what happened to that? And that's been going on since the 1990s.
And it makes it look like a big pinata. Leslie, Rich Maurer in Anchorage, John Stanton in Washington, please stand by. Jim is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I worked on the Senate Appropriations Committee in the late 70s and early 80s. And one thing that these reporters don't understand, perhaps, is that the administration does all kinds of earmarks before the bill comes to Congress.
Well, Leslie just pointed that out. Do you put those in the same boat as what Congress does or not?
Well, let me give you an example. When Reagan came in, a lot of his friends owned property around Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
They wanted the Forest Service to buy that so it wouldn't be developed. $100 million a year for 3 years. That's an earmark. Reagan did it. Congress didn't do it. I worked for a senator from a small eastern state.
Yeah.
We had a national forest with the same kind of development problems, okay? So we put an earmark in. Now, if you go to the Department of Agriculture, I worked on the Department of Agriculture's budget for a number of years.
Yeah.
It's full of earmarks when they're sent to the Hill. The VA makes its decisions about where to build facilities partly on the basis of politics.
So, Jim, as citizens, I mean, we were maybe born at night, but not last night. We're not babes in the woods. We know politics is going to be involved here. But what do you say, Jim, about where the line ought to be and how it can be enforced?
Well, the point is you start looking at the administration's budget. You're just not doing that. You're just beating up on Congress, Congress, Congress. And the administration is just as political.
John Stanton, to pick up Jim's point, what do you think? Is the White House got just as much pork on its fingers here as Congress?
Oh, I would agree that they do. I think the reason partly that as reporters we focus on Congress is because while the administration does definitely put a lot of, you know, these line items in that are essentially earmarks, Congress sort of has the final say on that stuff, and they can sort of ratchet back those projects. And it does get a little unseemly when you start having, you know, folks taking a questionable administration project and replacing it with, you know, one of their own, which is, it happens quite often. And, you know, and I also would make the point that, you know, when Senator McCain says he would, you know, stop earmarking, that's a very difficult promise to keep, because earmarks are not sort of just put into their own bill and they come up to the president and he can say, no, I'm not going to go with these. They're in, you know, spending bills and on supplemental war bills and sort of, you know, must-pass legislation that the political pressure is enormous on the administration, any administration, regardless of who it is, to sign the bill. And members know this, and that's why they stick these things into those bills.
And yet, we don't want to just get jaded on this. I mean, we see a former top aide to Alaska's Congressman Don Young pleaded guilty on bribery charges involving lobbyist Jack Abramoff. We see Senator Ted Stevens with strong ties to this oil field services company, Vico. He owned a racehorse with the head of the company. I mean, it just gets a little thick here. Leslie, what about the Democrats? Since they've come into the majority in Washington, have they done what's possible or necessary to clean it up?
Well, they sure talked a good game, no question about that. I mean, we were encouraged. Now, the first 100 days here has not been encouraging. I'm sorry to say they've already started backing off and reneging on promises. They're making it very, very difficult for us all to see what's going to be in these bills. And I'll give you a very, very distinct example, which was also in the news last week. Congressman Obie, who's chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the House, has basically came out and said, look, we're going to have you hold all your earmarks, folks. We had more than almost 36,000 requests already this year. So that in and of itself is a cause for alarm. Mm. Second of all, we're going to hold them all. I don't want you to give me your letters of request yet, folks. I want to hold off, and we're going to put them all in the conference phase. Now, that is absolutely the worst possible development.
Because
in
it's the last minute, the home stretch, no time.
Absolutely. And you can't amend a conference report. People have to understand, when you at least come to the floor with an appropriations bill with a list included, members of Congress who want to challenge those and strike them out of the bill have an opportunity to do that on the floor of the House. If you put this stuff in conference, you'll never get it out. And you'll never get to see it till it's already written into law.
And that's with Democrats in charge. Let's go to Alice in Buffalo, New York. Alice, you're on the air.
I think earmarks are just against both parties' basic philosophies. We don't send our representatives to Washington to see how much money they can get.
Are you sure? I mean, maybe Alaska does. Maybe other states do, too. They want new roads and highways and Lord knows what.
Well, I just don't think that's the way it should work. I just feel that it calls for more and more government, for example, if we're sending on the federal government for a bridge on our river.
Yeah, or a bridge to nowhere, as they call it. Alice, thanks for calling. Rich Maurer, what about it? Alice says it's against the philosophies of both parties. Can you see this ever getting washed out of the Alaskan approach to Washington, or is this just baked in the Alaskan cake there?
There are one or two other issues that we're concerned about, being facetious here, besides money coming back to Alaska. I mean, we definitely care about fisheries issues. We care about military issues, public lands, environmental issues, development issues. So we're sending people to Washington. Those all come up in debates, but frankly, yes, I think Alaskans believe money from Washington is something very important in the state.
And Stevens and Young in for the duration, how long?
Well, Stevens is up for re-election. They're both up for re-election in 2008. Senator Stevens is 83 today. Don Young, I believe, is in his 70s. These guys are not going to be around forever.
Rich, thanks very much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
John's calling right now from Davenport, Iowa. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is about this new, these appropriations being shed in a bad light, and a lot of them are legitimate projects. I happen to be working on a project here that's been delayed because of it just kind of came along at the wrong time. We didn't get our federal funding. I'm an engineer. I work on municipal projects. And
so was it an earmarked project that you were waiting on, John, or standard the standard budgeted item?
It was an earmarked project.
Right.
We were planning on getting congressional earmark money. And it's a legitimate project. It's not a bridge to nowhere. It's a large sewer that the city needed. And it seems to me that a lot of our taxes go to the federal side and very little goes to the state side in comparison. And if we're not getting that money back from the federal end, if we're going to end these earmarks, should we up our state taxes and reduce our federal taxes?
So maybe just don't send it to Washington in the first place if it's needed back in the state. Leslie, what do you say?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I mean, I'm sure John from Iowa thinks that his project is legitimate, and I'm not going to challenge it because I don't know exactly what it is. But the problem is, how do you know that your sewer project is any more legitimate than the one in New York City or down in Florida or in Detroit, Michigan, for that matter? I mean, there is no forum anymore to debate and to decide and make judgments. Congress has repudiated its responsibility to make these kinds of decisions. And, that your previous caller talked about administrative earmarks, and he's absolutely right. There are earmarks that come down for the administrative side, the executive branch. And the process is supposed to start that way, and then Congress takes that budget and is supposed to look at those and say, well, yes or no, or we're supposed to have a hearing, or is that grant and that earmark, has it been competitively awarded? Have you competed against that? Is it more meritorious and something else? This has been thrown right out the window.
Well, politics have always been there, though. Is it really worse than it ever was?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it has gotten worse because of secrecy, because of lack of transparency. I mean, you know, I noticed, I know John, I think Mr. Stanton from the roll call said something about, you know, McCain saying he doesn't want to do earmarks if he becomes president. Mm. But I'll tell you what he has done as the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. He and Claire McCaskill, his counterpart, he's the minority leader, she's the chairperson. Mm. They've decided that they're going to disclose earmarks on that committee. That is the first step toward getting some sort of transparency. They said, you know, go ahead and try, give us your letters, but we're going to disclose all of those earmarks. So,
and if Congress does not do the job of weighing needs relatively one against the other, what about John's suggestion? Just don't take the money in the first place. Leave it back in the state and let them use it.
That is absolutely certainly a relevant and excellent suggestion, and frankly, the federal government has grown, and that's where a lot of the earmarking problems have come in, is that the spending has gotten bigger. It's gotten, you know, the federal government's gotten huge, and it's very, very difficult to track all this spending. And just another reply to one of your earlier callers about the administrative executive earmarks, I mean, Senator Coburn and Senator Obama co-sponsored a piece of legislation last year, the Google government bill.
Oklahoma, Illinois, yeah.
Correct. But it was a bipartisan bill supported by a lot of folks from both sides of the aisle. President signed it in April, I believe. And that's going to set up a database. It's not up yet, but when it comes up, it will be a database. Not just of, it will be grants, it'll be contracts. You will be able to search on that database for spending. And you'll be able to see where that money's going. I think that's a very good step in the right direction, because the first step toward accountability is transparency.
So technology may help bail us out here a little bit somehow.
No question.
Yeah, let me take a call from Dan in Boston. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, or comment is, that it just seems that relative to transparency, that we move everything to the edge of just where it's legal and just before it becomes illegal. So whether it's the changing of the Attorney General in the Patriot Act or these earmarks, at what point do we as citizens demand that our elected officials have to be more transparent? And at what point do they sort of feel that they really need to do the right thing as opposed to just how far can we stretch it? And it would seem also that if these grants are going to be given out, that if the money is wasted or people, you know, run away with it, or a lot of the things that we've seen, that there actually is some kind of mechanism to go after and put these folks in jail, and not to make sure that they continue to get contracts and squander the money. So it seems to me that the oversight needs a lot of work.
Let's look at this question of how far it can be stretched or has been stretched. And Dan, thanks for calling. I want to bring in another voice. From Washington, Thomas Mann is with us. He's a senior fellow of government studies at the Brookings Institution, co-author of The Broken Branch, How Congress is Failing America and How to Get It Back on Track. Thomas Mann, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, happy to be with you again.
You hear our caller's perception that on so many fronts, the law is getting stretched way out to the far limits of what it was intended to underwrite, earmarks not least among that. And the question is, how do citizens get transparency back into this situation?
Well, I think we're on our way to some increased transparency. I know Leslie and John and others rightly point out that we have not had a sea change in Congress yet, but I would counsel a little patience. In fact, there are some rules changes. We're beginning to see more transparency in the process. Dave Obey has made a very controversial decision regarding withholding consideration of earmarks until the conference process.
Does that look like progress to you? Leslie says, no way that's progress.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. This is a concern, but it's a little too early to conclude that it will be harmful. Obey's personally committed, as the leadership is, to reduction at least by 50% in the volume and cost of earmarks. They've also committed to changes in the conference process that would require open meetings at which these earmarks would be approved. They've also said there'd be advance notice of them. So let's give them a little time to see if they can genuinely improve the process. I think the abuse over the last decade of the earmarking process, which, by the way, has always been with us and is an inevitable part of a political system with single-member districts in which politicians are expected to deliver on behalf of their constituents. Some level of this is inevitable, but it got out of hand over the last decade. I think there's been a real shift in the broad sense of this. I think it's going to be tamed a bit. It's not going away. It will always be part of our process. We shouldn't get so diverted to earmarks and ignore the other main drivers of federal spending, namely our mandatory spending programs, tax benefits,
Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, big defense budget, all that.
You got it. That's where the real dollars are. And earmarking, even as a percentage of discretionary domestic spending, is a fairly small amount.
But there's a sense of corruption that comes with it. Even when it's within the bounds of law, the kind of quid pro quos floating around out there make people tear their hair out.
And rightly so, Tom. That's where the abuse is. That's what's gotten out of hand. I mean, the stories recently of members benefiting from it in a personal sense, it's outrageous, and therefore we need to act on it, but don't kid ourselves. And John McCain's got a long record of fighting earmarks. I think that's great, but it's not an answer to deficits. That's a different story.
Yeah, there's a bigger animal, but how do you count on Congress to do the right thing on any front if there's a sense of a kind of incipient corruption in the air? John Stanton, weigh in here. I mean, people gunning for big bucks for their home states and cities is nothing new. Lord knows I'm sitting in Boston. We've got a huge big dig highway project here that dished deep into that. But this, everybody says, has gotten out of control. Do you see the Democrats actually willing to take the steps to sew it up? Or now that they're back in the majority, are they just looking to get their own?
I don't expect to see, you know, sort of a massive change in the rules now. I mean, I think that it'll be part of a long-term process. You know, there are some steps being taken now to, you know, create more transparency in the process, but transparency only goes so far. We did a story last week regarding an earmark, actually also in Alaska. It's called what is known as an orphan earmark, because it was very sort of vaguely worded for the study of a feasibility of constructing a natural gas pipeline from North Star Borough to South Central Alaska. Now, the language is very benign sounding, very sort of vague. And if you were to have that language, you know, sort of a transparent process, you know, Senator Stevens may have put his name onto it, or Congressman Young. But what happened after that language went in was that the delegation wrote a letter to the state saying this money is to go to a study being done by NSTAR for an NSTAR natural gas pipeline. NSTAR had hired Ben Stevens, Senator Stevens' son, as a consultant, was paying him significant amounts of money at the time that this was going on. So even if you have transparency, and there are hundreds of examples of these kinds of things where money goes into the federal budget, it sounds very benign or it's very vague sounding. It's hard to figure out sort of what it is. And so, you know, members will put their name to it, and then it's only when they then sort of go to the state or the federal agency and say, this is how I want this money spent. And
so even when you read it, you can't tell what it is.
Exactly.
Well, exactly. And particularly in cases like Senator Stevens when he was the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, or Representative Young when he was the chairman of the Transportation Committee in the House, you know, they wield an enormous amount of power. And federal agencies feel a lot of pressure to do what they're asked to by these folks because, you know, they give them the money that pays their bills.
Or they'll make trouble on other fronts. I mean, we read in this case of Coconut Road that the pressure came down from Congressman Young on Florida to he got the $40,000 from the developer. He wanted that money spent on that road, or the word came through Connie Mack down there, they might not get any more money.
Tom?
Thomas, I hear you there.
listen, what you're saying, we're learning about this. Roll Call has done some superb writing. There are criminal investigations underway on Alaska. Transparency makes a difference. And we're beginning to see it. We shouldn't just say it's all hopeless because it's not.
Amen. Well, let's pray that it's not. I want to go to Dan in Stamford, Connecticut. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to emphasize a political point that I don't think has been quite made yet, that earmarks are used sometimes to protect vulnerable senators and representatives in states or in districts that might not otherwise vote for them. I spent the last couple of years in North Dakota, where the congressional delegation is all Democratic. They've been there for quite a number of years, and they get voted in every single time. And I voted for them. I want to make that point. But they get voted in every single time. And my friends say out there, precisely because they're terrified of the appropriations money that comes from earmarks drying up if North Dakota is to lose its seniority in the Congress.
So it makes it look like a system that, as Thomas Mann says, and you've got this kind of representation, it becomes dependent on that. And then even the voters become kind of complicit in it. Dan, thanks for that. Let me get another call from Mitch in Bedford, Massachusetts. Mitch, you're on the air.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So my idea is that right now the earmarks, if you wanted to vote for a bill that got rid of earmarks and you were in the Congress, it would be a good government thing, but it would hurt the Democrats because the Democrats are in control right now. 2 years ago, the same bill would have been a good idea that people might have been in favor of, but it would have hurt the Republicans because the Republicans were in control.
So it can't be fixed because the party in power always has its hand on the spigot, but Thomas Mann says, take heart. Do you take heart, Mitch?
But, well, so the idea is pass a law that cuts back the earmarks and say that it will take effect 2 years from now, so you don't know who will be in control. You don't know which party it will help.
Place your bet on the roulette wheel and just see who comes up. Okay, Leslie, what do you say?
Well, I got a couple things. First of all, I wanted to, that's a very interesting idea, and I love hearing from people who have these creative ideas, and frankly, that's what my point is here, which is that, you know, Thomas Mann is absolutely right. We shouldn't consider it hopeless. I don't share his optimism about let's give it patience. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know how you're going to make that conference phase, you know, 36,000 earmarks. How's he going to manage that? He's already complaining that the reason they're doing it this way is because they can't manage the influx of requests. So I'm not quite as optimistic as Mr. Mann. However,
the tide's still coming in there.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
We haven't even seen the beginning of this yet. We're still seeing, this is 36,000 earmarks so far this year. And also, you know, this idea of putting your name on it is, you know, there's already anecdotal evidence out there that some of these letters, these requesting letters, are not complete and they're vaguely worded and the recipients' names are not clear. So there's going to be some issues there. But let me just say the problem can be solved, but it is not going to be solved by Congress itself. I don't think taxpayers ought to be looking at the leadership of either party for solutions.
Then who? The White House? The voters themselves?
Oh, absolutely. It's the voters. And I'll tell you why. I mean, the big power struggle, in my view, in our view anymore, is not between Democrats and Republicans in Washington and who's going to control those purse strings. It's between a ruling party, which is the spending people, the folks that run the purse strings.
Whichever
and
party
the person,
that may be.
Well, it doesn't matter. It could be Republicans. It could be Democrats. We're seeing both sides doing similar things now. And it's a struggle between the folks that pay those bills, that is the taxpayer, and the people that spend that money. And I'll tell you, the technology is out there now. Internet, blogging, combination of taxpayer groups, internet people, folks who run blogs, who are pushing for this disclosure. The pressure is on. It's not a mistake that they're under pressure now and they're scared and they're tentative. They are trying to get out from under this regime that is just now getting its foothold where they have to disclose all this stuff because this is going to give Americans a lot of information that they have never had before.
There may be some hope right there. Thomas Mann, we've got 10 seconds. Hope in the transparency of technology, maybe? Maybe?
Yeah, but let's not conflate debates over the proper size of government with the process of earmarking. Those are two different issues. You can have a bigger government, but one in which resources are allocated in a more responsible way. I think we ought to keep those two topics separate.
Point taken. We're just looking for how widely that earmark money spreads, though, and its impact. Thomas Mann at the Brookings Institution, thank you for being here. Leslie Page at Citizens Against Government Waste, and John Stanton at Roll Call, thanks to each of you. It's been great. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.